Can you tell me a story?
Sure. Once upon a time, a mom needed a new car.
Was she brave?
She was tired, mostly. But she went to Carvana.com and found a great car at a great price. No secret treasure map required.
Did she have to fight a dragon?
Nope. She bought it 100% online. From her bed, actually.
Was it scary?
Honey, it was as unscary as car buying could be.
Did the car have a sunroof?
It did, actually.
Okay, good story.
Car buying you'll want to tell stories about. Buy your car today on
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda White.
And this is Sam Dalton.
And today we are going to be talking about self-esteem. And I'm very excited about this topic because I feel like, Sam, we do talk about this whole, right? Like, we did an episode about what about me-ism, about not everything is about you, and that's actually a relief. And I feel like this blends in the historical context of how millennials were sort of raised as the participation trophy era.
We were very special.
We were. We were
very special children.
So what I didn't know, and I'm interested if you knew about this, is the self-esteem movement was actually a political movement. What? It started in the 1980s by a politician named John Vasconcellos. He was a California politician. And basically, tell me, Sam, you're much better at political history, obviously, than I am. But I'm like imagining this was during, right, like the Bush one era, where we were also sort of like fighting the war on drugs. And we were like in that sort of like self-helpy, early self-help 80s, 90s movement.
I know in the 80s, Nancy Reagan had the whole Just Say No, DARE program. Yes. Don't do drugs. Drugs are bad. That like whole vibe. So I think in this timeline, that makes sense that another politician would capitalize on that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So basically, he believed that low self-esteem was behind every problem in the country. He thought it was the solution to crime, to addiction, to kids dropping out in school, right? This feels very like Just Say No to drugs era.
Well, I think Americans are desperate for simple, straightforward, singular, binary answers that we can just dump all of our resources into and say, because we dealt with that thing, we dealt with it at large.
Totally. And I feel like this was during, people were very scared of drugs and addiction, and it was like this whole big thing. And what's really funny is his whole pitch, this is true, was that self-esteem would work like a vaccine. If you make people feel better about themselves, you protect society from itself. And it truly became one of the biggest ideas over the past 50 years. It changed how we parent. It changed school curriculums. It changed, the whole affirmation culture really came from this. And this whole generation was raised on, you're special. You can do anything. All you need to do is believe in yourself, right? Which hatched Tony Robbins. Basically, we've talked about the birth of the self-help movement around this time. And this, I think, is a really important piece, basically, in all of this. But this is like my question is, what happens to a person when you build them around a feeling that doesn't deliver on what's promised? So, right, in 1986, this guy, he created a California task force. Literally, the task force was called the Task Force to Promote Self-Esteem and Personal and Social Responsibility. So this social vaccine, they thought, would work. They thought self-esteem was the cure to crime, addiction, kids dropping out of school, teen pregnancy, and the magic bullet that you probably could know is coming, welfare dependency. But then what's actually really interesting is that they've in 2003, so like almost 15 years later, a psychologist named Roy Bauminster, he led a review to look at this research. Does self-esteem actually help? And this is what they found.
Roy Baumeister led a review for the Association for Psychological Science that pulled together the real evidence and asked the blunt question, does high self-esteem cause the good things we were promised? The answer was, in fact, bleak. High self-esteem reliably produced two things. People felt good, and they showed more initiative because they trusted their own judgment. That was basically it. Not better grades, not better job performance, not less aggression. The thing an entire generation was raised on had at most two payoffs, and one of them was just feeling good. Womp womp. Oops.
Tell me your reaction to this, Sam.
I mean, it makes sense that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because I think it's one element underneath a massive umbrella of problems. It's fine that you feel good about yourself, but if you are being raised in a home where your parents are addicts, if you are in a home where there's food insecurity, if you are in a home where you're not in a safe neighborhood, if you are in a home where you don't have good schools, you don't live in an area where there's a lot of funding, like, that's great that you feel good about yourself, but nobody is giving you the tools that you need to figure out how to climb out of this hole or climb this mountain. Like, it doesn't change those elements, I think.
Totally. And I think you raised a good point before of like, great, you feel good about yourself. Like, it is such an American thing. It is so in alignment with just like, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Right. Just think positive enough and everything will change. So yeah, it's not surprising. It is so much more complicated than that. And I feel like we are so bad as a society at tolerating the nuance, at tolerating how complicated things are, and we just want the simple solution to all of our problems.
Well, Americans just want to be able to fly a bald eagle in a tank into the wall of a problem and say, look at us, look what we did. And I mean, this, it's honestly not surprising to me. Like, I think the other deep dives that we've done, I've learned stuff that's really surprising. And I feel like this has me kind of going, oh, I feel really validated actually right now.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
Especially like, you know, any amount of like, it's why, yes, overly simplistic affirmations, things like that, they can help, but they're one piece of a very complicated puzzle. I think it's also really interesting how much violence and crime was tied to this. Like, they really believed that bullies secretly hate themselves. So if we just boost their self-esteem, they'll stop. And what's really interesting is Baumeister also published a paper before that huge one he did in 2003. He literally wrote a paper called The Dark Side of High Self-Esteem. And his argument was that violence usually isn't about people who hate themselves. It's about threatened egotism. So people with highly favorable views of themselves that someone challenges, right? When the world sort of disputes your inflated self-image, you lash out to defend it. So it makes me think about, we've talked on here before about anger and how there's this notion sometimes on Instagram that like anger means you were wronged. Mm-hmm. And like anger can also mean that your ego was bruised. I mean, look at the men in power right now who are extremely angry. It is all the time. It is all ego. No one is actually threatening them. It's actually entitlement. So when research measured this directly, aggressive people actually often had high self-esteem, not low self-esteem, but it was often that like narcissistic kind of self-esteem, right? Where like outwardly you are macho and threatening, but it's very fragile. In the worst case, right, this social vaccine, and we're going to get into like what about the difference between men and women, could have had the opposite effect. What do you think about that?
Kind of going back to what you first started with like the crime and the violence. Mm-hmm. I remember in the 1990s, there was a huge movement about the concept of the super predator.
Tell me about that.
They would talk about this super predator. And of course, as you can imagine, who was the super predator more often than not? Young black men.
Yes.
Right? And that created all of this fear-mongering around poverty, around crime, around low-income neighborhoods, mm-hmm. and villainized these people who, one, this concept of a super predator didn't exist. There were,
I can't believe it was called super predators. Yeah. That's wild.
In the news, they would talk about it all the time. Super predators, super predators, super predators. And that was around the time that Donald Trump took out an ad in the newspaper saying that he wanted the death penalty for the five young men that were wrongfully charged with the rape of that woman in Central Park, the Central Park Five.
Yep, yep.
He, of course, really dove into that whole super predator, and he just wanted to be able to buy out slums to build gaudy, ugly apartment buildings. But the reason I bring that up is because I feel like so much of this is tied to, and I'm not trying to like take us into like a direction of race, but I feel like it's all connected. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is a huge movement that was so heavily pushed in white communities.
Yes.
You need to love yourself, this gentleness. There's people around you that could threaten this peace that you have, right? Like these super predators that are out to get you. And the problem is these people just don't love themselves, and we love ourselves. And that's why we live in good neighborhoods and nice neighborhoods, because we love ourselves and we think we're so good and so special. And I just find that in this whole conversation, everything that we're talking about, it's dumb. Like mm-hmm. realizing all of a sudden now, thinking of how we were raised, the messaging that we were given, thinking of when I was a kid, how things were presented to me, it didn't help me. Mm-hmm. I still had insecurities. I still didn't like myself. People were still mean to me.
Yep.
People that presented as very confident, right, would still be mean to other people. Like, yes. I don't know. So I think that's where my mind has been spinning as I've been listening to this.
Totally. Well, I think it's also to bring up, you know, what you were saying about white people pushing this narrative. I think it's, mm-hmm. again, because white people, like, often in this narrative don't want to admit that, like, maybe it was actually money. Nope. That helped them, privilege, yes. all of those things. And instead, we're trying to make it something that is just like rugged individualism that has made these other communities better, you know, than Black communities or poor communities, right? It just makes sense because people who are really privileged often want to associate their success with something they did.
Yes.
Right. And that someone else could do it if they just worked as hard or were more confident or tried to be happy or whatever. Like, it is so ripe with that individualism.
Right. They don't want to admit that anybody could do what they did if they had access to the resources they had access to.
Totally. Totally. And I also, yeah, I want to dive into what you were saying about sort of like this mid-90s, this entitled but fragile kind of idea, because I agree too. And it makes me think about Stephanie O'Connell we had on the podcast. Her book is called The Ambition Penalty, and it's really fascinating the research she does about women. And she really critiques the movement that we grew up in that's like, women, you can be anything. And again, then, right, when you kind of set people up and say your mind is your only limitation, and then people don't succeed in the way that they were promised or expected to, there is this like almost worst fallout, because then I think you blame yourself, which is sort of the whole crux of the self-help movement that I think we really talk about a lot on this podcast. Is if you don't talk about other factors, you blame yourself and then you feel worse about yourself. So it's almost like I can see how not only did this self-esteem movement, you know, not help women and people of different, you know, races and socioeconomic backgrounds, but it also like emboldened maybe men and people who did have more power because they already could be whatever they wanted to be.
First of all, that book is top tier. The Ambition Penalty. It's very good. I, going along with that, I have a really hard time with optimization
mm-hmm.
content as well. And I think this is something we could do like an entire episode on, but I feel like it ties into this self-esteem thing a little bit because of what you just brought up about this is like setting us up for failure. Yep. When we say that like, I am my only limitation.
Yeah.
It's like, well, then to me, in my personal experience and my professional experience, when you are so hyper-focused on I am the only roadblock, right, to everything that I want, it is inevitable that you will fail. If you're thinking that's the only thing you have to overcome, it is inevitable that you are going to fail, which is then exactly, as you said, going to confirm your insecurities. It's going to confirm your self-doubt. It's going to confirm your belief that you're not good enough to do these things, because all of the legitimate external roadblocks to doing what you want to do, you're not focused on actually solving those. Mm-hmm. You're thinking to yourself like, well, this is just something that I need. Like, there's something wrong with me that I don't know how to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
Right? And then we've talked about this on the podcast before, of getting trapped in like information seeking. Mm-hmm. Right? If I just know more, eventually I'll know more and I'll know enough. Right? I'll believe in myself enough to move forward. I'll love myself enough to do what I need to do. If I know more, I'll be healed enough, right? And it's like, no, anybody that has actually had legitimate success, it's been clunky as hell. The process of getting anything that you want, I don't care what it is clunky as hell. And I think that is what this like self-esteem movement, if we put this huge umbrella over the last 30, 40 years, right? The outcome now has been nobody's better off for it. And so now it's like, well, now I need to optimize my daily schedule. If I just optimize my schedule, then I'll be okay. If I time block my life down to the second, then I'll be able to figure it out.
Totally. Well, what I love that you're bringing up, Sam, too, is it makes me think about like perfectionism and yes. how we have this belief that if we're perfect enough, everything will be great. And that is so unrealistic and sets you up to fail and feel worse because you don't develop the actual skill underneath it that you need, which is like, I will inevitably fail. How do I bounce back?
Yeah.
Where yeah. this is like, I have to believe in myself enough and then everything will be great. Again, there's no then conversation about what are the tools? What am I going to do when I do encounter roadblocks, when this doesn't work?
Well, I like people will ask me a lot with like my social media presence mm-hmm. and content creation and, you know, building up one-on-one clients and like all that stuff and this podcast and stuff. Like, people will ask all the time, like, how do you do it? Mm-hmm. Like, how have you done this? I'm like, first of all, I'm nowhere near the place that I would ideally like to end up. So mm-hmm. there's that. Second, I have doubted myself every single day. Mm-hmm. Every single day, there has been an element of, I don't think I'm good enough for this. Should I be doing this? Right? There's people that are better at this than me. Like, you know, do I have what it takes to get what I want? Mm-hmm. And all of those thoughts exist while I am over here problem solving. Mm-hmm. How do I show up better? Right? Realizing mm-hmm. like, ooh, maybe I was pushing myself too hard. My expectations mm-hmm. of myself were too high. Mm-hmm. I was trying to do too much too soon. This is going to be a slow process. This is going to take time. And something taking time is not an indicator that I am not good enough to achieve it.
Yes.
And I think that's what's like, I think social media has taken this self-help thing and poured kerosene on it, or this self-esteem thing and poured kerosene mm-hmm. on it, because now we're just seeing these hyper-specific highlight reels mm-hmm. of what people have achieved. And we also really only see the unicorns, mm-hmm. right? The unicorns of like, this company took off overnight and they got a $1 billion valuation. And, you know, now we're talking about companies that are getting $1 trillion valuations out of the gate. So like all we're seeing is success mm-hmm. in its highest form all the time. And all the average people underneath are like, oh, well, I'm a piece of shit. Mm-hmm. Because I don't have that. I don't have it yet. I don't know how to get that. I'm blah, 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 blah. And then we still have people that are like, well, you just need to work on your mindset.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that is the problem with social media, is we compare ourselves to things that we have no business comparing ourselves to. also. Like who your peers are is so radically not what it should be, because social media has like democratized everything, which is good in some ways. It also makes it that like you're competing against brands and like professional podcasts and like all of that stuff, which is just right. Or you're comparing your home to a literal interior designer's home, right? Or someone who has millions and millions of dollars and this is their main hobby. Like, it's just not realistic.
Well, and to pick at somebody that you and I both have a love-hate relationship for, Shay McGee. Just just for an example, I have no yes. ill will towards Shay McGee. Have you seen the house?
Yes.
And house, I don't, that's not even, like, estate.
Yeah, she's building basically a neighborhood, but I think one of the homes in the neighborhood is going to be in the Utah Parade of Homes. And it is probably 20,000 feet square feet at least.
That has to be minimum a $15 to $20 million home.
Minimum. Probably more.
Probably yeah. more. It is obscene. Mm-hmm. And there is a part of me that's like, I don't know how to relate to in the gym, the TV is recessed into a marble wall. Like, I don't.
No, wait, mine is, I don't understand how their pantry is way nicer than my kitchen. They have another range, another full fridge, another floating range hood.
Yeah. Like. But here's the other thing. I know where that house is.
Really?
I know where it's located, and it is located in the shittiest area that I can imagine. No, it's really? In a gross area. Yes.
That's really funny to me.
It's in South Provo. It's old as dirt. Everything around it, everything's like super run down. I know where this
is. No wonder they're building a neighborhood. They need yes. to create like restaurants for themselves. Like, just create a town. Just design the town.
Yeah. And then I that came up as an example to me mm-hmm. when you were thinking of like the comparison, because it's like the population or the group of people that can legitimately look at that home and say, that's a great idea. I'm going to do that in my next build, right? Or I'm going to reach out to my architect and my designer and let them know that that's what I want. Like, the group of people that can do that is literally numbered in the thousands.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Like, across the globe. And I think we are being so unfair to ourselves, which this is, we're really about to get into the weeds of like self-esteem here. And I hope I'm not hijacking your whole
thing. No, you're fine.
I think you do have to have a basic sense of self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
You do have to have some form of an innate belief that I am worthy to a point of receiving love, of having a safe life, of having good things happen to me, and having a balance of like understanding that because bad things happen, that doesn't mean good things can't happen for me too, right? Mm-hmm. That is just a stable sense of self in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That foundation allows you to have perspective of building out a sense of what you actually want from your own life.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are solely hyperfixated on, do I love myself?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Do I love myself? Like, do I have self-esteem?
Yeah, that's what self-esteem is yes. like, do you like and love yourself? Which is a very flimsy concept compared to self-worth, understanding yes. your values, being rooted in what's important to you.
Because here, if we use like the Shay McGee's Parade of Homes example.
Yeah.
Right? If you are solely, if you are coming from a place of self-worth,
mm-hmm.
you can look at that house and have perspective to say, I am not failing at my yeah. life because I am not building that home.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Right? Like, yeah. like I, that's a beautiful home. It's lovely. Very happy for this family that is going to enjoy this home. I'm okay that I haven't reached that point yet, or that I might never reach that point. Mm-hmm. That doesn't impact my worth.
Yeah.
If you are solely focused on your esteem,
mm-hmm.
your self-esteem, there is a really strong chance that you could see that and start going, well, I don't have that yet. And I might never have that. And I really want that. I don't know how to get that.
Or even worse, Sam, like, yeah. I will only be happy if I have something like that. And exactly. Some of you may be like, no, I would never think that I would need a $15 million house. Fair. We're using this as the most extreme example.
Yes.
But I do think a lot of us, myself included, struggle with this, like, I will be happy when this, I will be happy when that. And we continue to do it. And then you get there and you are unsatisfied and unfulfilled.
Right.
Because you have mistaken self-esteem as like the key and the like the point of happiness and what will fulfill you. When actually living a life that is in alignment with your values is what leads to a fulfilling life.
So I work from home full time, and something that I am always on the hunt for are comfy clothes that I can wear while sitting all day in my house, but looking professional and put together. And I have found an answer, and I want to share this answer with you, which is the bamboo jogger set from Cozy Earth. Now these, you've heard me talk about Cozy Earth a million times and how comfortable their sheets and pajamas are. But when I tell you their clothing is made from the same exact material as the sheets and the pajamas, I'm being honest. It is made from the viscose from bamboo, which is what all of their products are made from. And these are the softest, most comfortable joggers and jogger top that I've ever worn in my life, honestly. They are the perfect answer to when I just need to throw something on, getting started for the workday, feeling put together while also feeling comfortable. And because they're so lightweight and breathable, I find in this transitional time of year that we're in terms of seasons, it's like the perfect balance. Like it helps you stay warm when it's a little chilly outside, but it's also really cool when it warms up as the day goes on. So the incredible thing about Cozy Earth that I always remind people is that there's two things. One, you get a 100-night trial with any product that you buy. Any product that you buy, you get 100 nights to return it if you're not happy with it. And then the second thing is any product that you get also has a 10-year warranty. So if anything goes wrong, anything happens to it, you can let them know. And there is a 10-year warranty on that product. So I would love to give you a gift, okay, for the month of May. If you go to CozyEarth.com and you check out and you use code NUANCE, N-U-A-N-C-E at checkout, you will get 20% off your entire order, okay? Go to CozyEarth.com, use code NUANCE, N-U-A-N-C-E, for 20% off your entire order. Can't wait to hear what you think. I think who we're speaking to here, because you and I are both ambitious girlies, right? We are speaking to our fellow ambitious girlies, because you, like, to make the life that you want to build sustainable, you cannot be solely focused on, do I love myself? Mm-hmm. Because that fluctuates from day to day.
Yes.
As it's designed to. As we've talked about on this podcast before, there is absolutely no state of mind and no emotion that is permanent.
Yep.
Ever. So even if you're on, like, you're feeling great about yourself that day, things went really well, you did something that you've been working on or something finally came together, right? The next day, it could all fall apart. Mm-hmm. And you feel like you're starting over, or there's a new problem or a new thing that you have to fix, or like you thought it was done and something's different, right? Like if you are coming from esteem and you just think like, well, the only way that I can be is that I have to love myself through these things, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to crack and crumble every time.
Yep.
You're going to die. Like if it's just like, well, if I love myself more, I'll get this. And it's like, well, but you can't.
Yeah. Right. Self-esteem is really hard to measure.
Yeah.
It is very like opaque. It's black and white. It doesn't talk about how it, you know, moves around and things like that too. And what's really interesting with the research is that most of this research that they originally did that was saying self-esteem is great and it's the solution to aggression, all of this was studied on men also. So that's also the complicated part of all of this is, right, like, you know, there is some research that for women, self-esteem does matter more than men, because of this like fragile narcissism, ego, aggression we're talking about. But I think what we're also leading to, Sam, is not just living a life that's in alignment with your values, but what I really believe in is like self-compassion is the other part of this. Like I'm a very big believer in like, don't try to have good self-esteem. Try to be compassionate to yourself, because that's what, again, like we were saying with the, it's not about what you do, it's about how you bounce back from situations. The self-esteem, if we all know we're going to fail and mess up, our ability to be compassionate to ourselves is what leads us to be able to get back in the game compared to just shutting down and giving up.
Well, and compassion is also tied to like forgiving yourself.
Yes.
Like that you are going to say things you don't mean. You're going to do things that were in the heat of the moment that you wouldn't have done if you were in a different setting or situation. Like it's exactly as you said earlier, of being able to cope with that inevitability and have a sense of worth that, one, that's not an indicator of who you are all the time.
Yeah.
When you make a mistake or mess up or something doesn't work out or doesn't come together, right? And two, that you're allowed to start over.
Yeah.
And do better once you know better. And that has nothing to do with saying like, well, I have to love myself.
Totally. Totally. You can do self-compassion, right? I think that's that's what I'm thinking too, is like self-esteem requires something before you act. You know, like you have to love yourself or like yourself. That's before the solution. Yeah. Where like what I really like about self-esteem or self-compassion is you can be compassionate to yourself while you're doing things. Like while you've messed up, you can be compassionate to yourself and still be messing up. You can be compassionate to yourself while you're like rebuilding and while you're in the mess. And my favorite and the most popular framework for self-compassion is Kristen Neff's work, who really boils it down to a simple framework of there are three parts of self-compassion. One, there's common humanity, where you recognize that you are, that anyone who went through this would feel this way. Like you have in common with other people that you not getting what you wanted, failing at something, struggling with something. These are common things of just being a human. The second part is, right, like talking to yourself the way you would talk to a friend. And then the third part is mindfulness, which is so crucial to all of this that self-esteem does not cover at all, which is you have to be able to basically separate, you know, yourself from your thoughts. You have to be able to like observe in sort of a non-judgmental state your thoughts and feelings without trying to suppress them, which is pretty opposite to self-esteem, which in a lot of positive self-esteem, you know, movement circles is just like, don't think negative thoughts. Don't, you know, think negatively about yourself, thought replacing, all of that stuff, which I don't find to be very effective personally or professionally.
Well, I'm frustrated with a lot of things right now with the state of the world, but I think something that has been specifically annoying to me is this inability of people to accept that there is, one, no moment that you are working towards where all of this will never be a problem again. That's not going to happen ever.
Yep.
And two, that this is, you are talking about committing to a marathon of being. And I've been noticing that even lately with some of the people I work with, there is this wall of, well, I've tried it and it doesn't work. Or how do I do, like the thoughts come back.
Yes.
Right? It gets really hard again. And I'm like, yeah.
That's the point.
I have no magic fix for that. And you are talking about making a commitment to yourself. And I think that is the beauty of coming from a place of this sense of self-compassion and self-worth and consistency. You are talking about showing up for you, even when it is not convenient, even when it is hard, even when it feels impossible, right? Of saying like, well, I don't like myself today, right? I'm not happy with the way things are. I'm not okay with how this turned out. I feel really disappointed. Okay, so how do I exist in that framework today?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. What are the decisions I need to make today that help me cope with that reality? And to accept that the way you function that day is going to be different from how you function on the day where everything is going really well. And to allow space for that fluidity. And I think people are so desperate for things to be easy.
Mm.
And I'm kind of getting like frustrated with it. Of like, I don't understand like why it's so intimidating to think like, oh, I just get to accept where I am.
Yeah.
I find myself like getting kind of frustrated with some of the people on social media where everything is so like black and white and binary, and it has to be, you know, the constant all or nothing thinking,
mm-hmm.
and the catastrophizing if anything is wrong at all in any form,
yep.
and like the immediate like rejection of any sense of like hope or possibility or meaning or purpose, right? Mm-hmm. And I think this is like across issues. I'm not even just talking about like politically or anything like that. I think this is just the way people react to things that happen in their lives.
Yeah. I think it's really hard to explain like struggle and what mm-hmm. it looks like day to day to work and build something, whether that's like actual work or just working on yourself or working yeah. on a relationship or right. whatever. And it goes back before, you know, like it's, I mean, the one that comes to mind for me is like relationships, like happily ever after, right? Like all of these concepts. And I am like very into this. I just think it's fascinating because I do feel like we're sold this with a relationship. You'll be happy when you're in a relationship, happily ever after, you get married. Like we act like marriage is the finish line, sort of. And then we wonder why things are hard, or you just want a kid so badly. And you have a kid or you have multiple kids. And then, like, I'm so fascinated by, like, the after
yeah.
of things. Uh-huh. Of, like, what happens when you get what you want, or what happens when the moment you've been building your life up towards, it's a moment. And then how do you live on the other side of it?
Well, I find that fascinating in athletes.
Yeah.
The level of depression, like Olympic athletes specifically, just because that's yes. the most like obvious one, right? The level of depression they feel.
Totally.
When it's over. Or, you know, when teams win a championship.
Mm-hmm.
Individual players will comment on like, now what?
Yeah.
I did it. It's over. I feel the same. My life is still the same
mm-hmm.
in a lot of ways. And I think like, honestly, like this is something I've been seeing in my life.
Yeah.
Like the last 2 years, I've made some pretty like monumental changes and, mm-hmm. and been through some really big transitions
mm-hmm.
in different ways. You know, I'm recently in a relationship. And I think something that's been like powerful for me to surrender to is that I don't have to be different.
Mm.
It's okay that I show up to these moments as my like imperfect self.
Mm-hmm.
And I can savor a moment of a win without it needing to alter entirely like the trajectory of my life
mm-hmm.
or who I am or how I show up. Like I'm allowed to be me.
Yeah.
Through this. And because I think when I left Utah.
Yeah.
After 15 years and landed in Florida, there really was this like, oh, I'm still me.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever you go, there you are. Like yeah. this fixed a handful of problems, but I still have a basket of problems over here that I need to confront and deal with and sort through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was like a humbling realization that I did something that was inherently beneficial to me, something that I wanted to do, was a big goal of mine. And it didn't have to fix my whole life.
Yeah.
It was just a new opportunity. It was a new moment that allowed me a different space to approach things differently.
Mm-hmm.
But to stop putting that pressure on everything that like this thing has to heal me.
Yeah.
Right? This singular moment has to be everything to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a mindset that I absolutely have not perfected in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been helpful to just like allow life to be life.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of the pressure of like everything has to be like great.
Yeah.
And monumental.
Yeah.
And things have to be changing and altering and moving and
mm-hmm.
in these like, you know, significantly noticeable ways.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, like I'm allowed, but like my worth exists outside of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one thing I've been dealing with, and we were talking about this before we started recording, is I live a lot of my life of like, I just got to get through this or that.
Yeah.
And it creates a lot of like bracing where I am just like head down, like, I don't know. I feel like I have a helmet and I'm just like, the one sports metaphor I'll ever use, right? It's like a football player with my head down, like barreling, you know, on a, this is where the football is going to fall apart. I don't know, a lineman.
On the field?
On the field. Yeah. A lineman.
I'm with you.
Just
I'm with
trying you. To like push, you know, things yeah. forward. Yeah. And I've been trying to be like, this is my life. There are going to be hard things. Maybe this is a lesson and I'm taking on too much. But also, how can I be more open in this process? Because I keep doing this thing where I'm like, when this happens, I'll be able to relax. When this happens, I'll be able to enjoy. When this happens, I'll be able to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
And then you live your life like that. Mm-hmm. And nothing is changing. There is going to be no other side of that.
No, because there's always something.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't ever allow yourself to feel safe enough to take a break, you're never going to take a break.
Mm-hmm. Because I can't take a break right now, though.
There we go. Did you hear that, everybody? In real time. She's rejecting the work.
I know. This is my problem.
But like,
yeah,
to ease into some of this stuff, it does require vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
It requires the willingness to feel vulnerable and realize that when you are vulnerable, you are inevitably open up to hurt and disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
And to accept that. And that's horrifying
mm-hmm.
to think of like opening yourself up to hurt
mm-hmm.
and rejection. But
mm-hmm. Or I think like for me, it's like disappointing other people. This podcast really took a turn.
But I think as the best ones do. Because I mean, I struggle with like people being disappointed in me too. But what? And I'm asking this question of both of us. This is not just mm-hmm. me putting you on the spot. What does it mean if someone is disappointed in you?
Well, I think this is where it's like I need to tend to my body, because right now my body reacts so mm-hmm. much. It is like hard for any like mental tool
mm-hmm.
to work because right now it feels very threatening to disappoint people. And that's why like I'm a big believer too, and like all the stuff we talk about really, really matters, and we also have to like tend to our body mm-hmm. sometimes first if these, you know, mental tools aren't landing.
I think for me, I spent so much time like wrestling with my brain and beating it up. And I think a lot of it was tied to some of this esteem stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This feeling that I have to love myself. I have to like myself. I have to do this. I have to do that. And, you know, constantly like this war of like, I deserve this. I don't deserve this. I deserve this. I don't deserve this. And I think when I surrendered to the reality that maybe I'll never believe that I deserve something,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't mean I can't have it. Like I can have that doubt exist in my brain while choosing to pick that thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like if that makes sense, like I don't,
mm-hmm.
I don't have to push it away or sabotage it or reject it.
Yeah.
Just because I have that belief in there.
Totally.
Like the entirety of me gets to exist in these situations. And I think with like to think of like disappointing someone,
mm-hmm.
which is a big one. It's really kind of freeing like for me to realize like there's people probably right now that are disappointed in me in some form.
Mm-hmm.
There's people that are probably disappointed in my content.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like it. It's boring. You know, there's people that I've disappointed in my life. If I've let mm-hmm. them down, if I said the wrong thing, if I didn't do things I said I was going to do, or, you know, I think letting that anxiety move through me and just accepting mm-hmm. it as like an inevitability.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the biggest, my like final boss lately has been being in this new relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That has been a wild experience mm-hmm. of balancing this idea of like esteem and worth
mm-hmm.
in being like, but I haven't fully loved myself.
Right.
I don't love myself. I still have these doubts and I'm showing up and it's been like terrifying to give a boundary, but also accept a boundary.
Yeah.
Right? Like when a boundary is put towards me mm-hmm. of what he's needed, me having that wrestle of like, oh, this, like, it's not about me.
Yeah.
Right? This is not a rejection of me. This is him telling me a need.
Yeah.
That is a little different from my need.
Yeah.
And to like respect that, right? Yeah. Like that's been wild.
Yeah.
In my brain to sit with that.
Yeah. What's coming up for me is like in this barrel down metaphor, if I can be more open, I can let like the anxiety pass through me, I think, more than if you're like in that protective defensive position.
Right.
You don't have like the openness to let it pass through you. You're like staying in it. You're stuck in it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're closed off to the solution
mm-hmm.
as much as you are stuck in the problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, we hope you all got something out of this.
That was a ride. Nice and
that was fun. So in conclusion, don't aim for self-esteem. Aim for self-worth. Develop self-compassion.
Yeah.
And give yourself a break. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let all these things exist Woo-hoo! At the same time. All right. We love you. We will be back next week.
Yeah. Bye.